So I would like in some way to continue sailing slow by presenting you some approaches which we followed within the same project. Actually, we were working together in an SE NIM project, so we financed a project in France who lasted for about 3 or 4 years. I'm going to present you actually two kind of extreme approaches, alternative models compared to what Céline was presenting. Obtained actually by following two opposite strategies. The first one consists in trying to reduce the number of degrees of freedom to its minimum value, like we'll obtain model, we call that 0D model, as you don't have any PDE, you don't have any partial differential equation, you suppress space, you just keep the time as variable, and you, I will present a model based basically on the displacement at the variable X Céline used a few minutes ago. And the other one, the other approach, which is kind of difficult to link with the first one, but I will try at the end to make a synthesis between both approaches, if I have time. So it's obtained by trying to complexify at the maximum to increase the number of degrees of freedom. That might sound awkward to try to make something which is complex, to try to make it very complex. But I'll try to convince you, yeah, in some way, it may be useful to simplify the mathematical framework and to at least it raises, I hope so, interesting questions. If I am not saying that it gives answer, but at least it raises questions. So let me start with the kind of schematic representation of the model Céline talked about. This is so I think you didn't use the same pictures, but this corresponds to what Céline was presenting with the first Navier-Stokes tree, the upper part of the tree, and then those equivalent resistances here. This is a three-generation Navier-Stokes tree, so we have 8 outlets linked with a simple box which is supposed to represent all the alveoli together, which are at the same pressure, and this pressure pushes on a piston which is supposed to represent all what is has a mass in the parenchyma. Everything is related to a single spring, that the same K that Céline had, which represents all the elastic forces within the lungs. So I'm going to simplify that by just suppressing the Navier-Stokes part and replacing all the like magic trick, so I'm going to end up with a much simpler thing. So I replaced that by an equivalent resistance. So by doing that, I suppress all the geometrical problems, representation, meshes, etc. I don't have a PDE anymore. So what I neglect is inertia in the upper part of the tree. And obviously, this model will not be able to, for example, to follow the path lines of particles. So that's not intended to do that. But I will see that it's enough to recover some measured quantities, and also it's a good basis to ask questions, and I hope I will be able not to answer to questions which were asked this morning, but at least to reformulate them in terms of mathematical model. So I suppressed I replaced the whole tract with an equivalent resistance, which is R here, and I have the Poiseuille-Law for this tree, which writes simply the pressure drop equals the flux times the resistance, and the flux corresponds to the volume variation, so the gas here is incompressible, so which is, if I call S the surface of the piston and X the position of the piston, so X star is the velocity, so S X star is the volume variation. And the force exerted on the piston is PA for alveoli. So we obtain something which is very classical. Actually, we present it a different way, but this is it has been studied for at least, I would say, 30 or 40 years in different forms by many, it is not exhaustive, but many people have worked on those kind of model. So we obtain a simple ODE with a single variable X, and so this is the mass of the overall parenchyma. R is the total resistance, so S was the area, which is it's not so easy to explain what is this represent actually, because you have to fit it in the model in a proper way. And mu accounts for all the dissipative effects within the structure, the viscoelastic effect within the parenchyma. So every dissipation which is not related to the flow through the tree is contained in this mu, or quantified by this mu, and k is the stiffness, and f is the forcing term, as previously. So it takes, I have to say that it takes a long time. It took us perhaps 2 years to find the right values for simple k, mu, s, r is well known at least, but all they don't have such obvious signification, because the model, you see that the model is quite far from the real object. So this is the one example. So we took some values from the literature, and also we try by doing extra computation, try to adapt our computation to reality. I have to say that, like Celine said, that actually if you want to recover realistic behavior, you have to use nonlinear stiffness to account for the fact that the volume is limited by the thoracic cage. It's limited. It has an upper bound and also a lower bound. So you have to tune up a cake quite I will not go into details, not essential here. So this is exactly the picture we had with Sonny. I don't even know if it's all. This is experimental, sorry. This is measured. So this is a joint work with Thomas Similowski and Christian Strauss, working at the Pitié Salpêtrière, and they provided us with those are measurements. And you can tune up the force, and of course the parameters I presented to you, to recover, to have a fairly good representation. But I have to say that it's not, even if the model were completely wrong, that would probably be possible to do that, to fit in the simple curve, because you have this control F. So this is not completely convincing that if you recover what is measured in practice, as in practice you don't know anything about FE, so for us it's the free parameter, so we have a lot of freedom to recover that. What is a bit more difficult is to recover right flux, the flow volume loop in this phase diagram, as a mathematician call it. So here, as Celine said, here is the volume is represented. So let me show you. Here, what is very interesting is from that point. So it's a maximum expiration, and then the guy is asked to expire quite strongly as he can, and this corresponds to this loop. And it's very difficult, and I think it's very significant from a medical point of view. I'm not a specialist, of course, but many things may appear in the shape of this curve, and it's everything between this point and that point, all that, it occurs just between that point and say here, half a second later. So you cannot see anything here, just a straight line, very stiff, so that's not at all, you cannot validate anything with that. But if you look at this flow volume loop, it's much more significant, and you see the shape is quite particular. And I have to say, with a simple model, we were not able yet to find the right loop. But this is already not so easy to recover that kind of thing. I think at least it has the a nice the same shape, but we were not able to recover this plateau. Yeah, and I have to say this corresponds to, I think this was not too healthy guy. Whereas the plateau is kind of pathological. I don't know, perhaps there are people here who might be able to correct me. So what we find actually is a healthy cycle. So to end with that, is I don't know if it's clear, but the loops here corresponds to a normal breathing before the actual action. And then this is the first inspiration, high inspiration. So the volume here is positive to the convention doctors use. It's positive in the left direction. And here is the big loop, which is actually significant from medical point of view. So concerning extension, I would like to show you that even such a simple model may be useful to recover, at least to ask, I hope, interesting question, and to study, find the influence on some sensitive parameters in the respiratory process. So there are many extensions. This is, again, not exhaustive. Some people have worked, our colleague, for example, Tomas Imilovsky, on already a long time ago, on two compartment models. Some have added gas transport and diffusion. Well, this is a more recent paper. I would like to present you now some studies based on the, well, it's very expiratory, but a way to integrate the action of smooth macro in the respiratory ventilation process, and another modeling improvement of the model by integrating oxygen impoverishment. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, and I hope that may be related to some questions who were asked this morning, it's based on, so we are going to try to answer the question. So I don't know if you know anything about smooth macro, so it's a muscle around branches, and its actions is to keep the branches, to keep the diameter of the branches small. So that might look awkward because it increases clearly the resistance. So it might be considered, that's what I wrote here, it might be seen as counterproductive. And actually, if you have asthmatic people, it's when people have a bad condition, it's really, really bad, the action of the smooth muscle. It's actually really counterproductive. So we wanted to see in such a simple model, we were able to find at least beginning of an explanation, how could it be seen as something which acts in the right direction, because we still have smooth muscle. So does it, can we explain why it can be useful? It will lead us to a new notion of efficiency. You were talking about optimization, and actually we have to go out of the idea that optimization is optimization of dissipated energy, that we see some for something else. So the model is actually very, very simple. There are many underlying assumptions, but it's the following. You just say that volume, when you have volume variation, which is in our model S times X, this volume variation can be decomposed onto a volume variation of alveoli. So that also is related to the question you asked to Celine. So the alveoli, of course, inflate, and also the branches, they deform. And one may think that alveoli are quite smooth, they deform quite a lot, but theta, the parameter, is intended to measure the repetition of those two inflations. So when you have volume increase, a part is taken as increase of the alveoli, and the other part is taken by the branches. So when theta is close to zero, that's important to keep that in mind. It means that the branches are rigid. So theta equals to zero, it means you have a rigid tree, and when you have volume increase, everything is taken, this is increase is realized by alveoli. So as you know, the resistance of a pipe is proportional to L to D over D to the fourth. So you have how much energy change, T minus 3, which means like if you assume, which is, I know, quite far from reality, but let's make this simple assumption, that the deformation of the whole tract is homothetic, okay, everything deforms the same way, the resistance of the tree is proportional to the inverse, the reciprocal of the total volume. So that's what I wrote here. So I have R0 corresponding to X equals 0. R0 is the resistance at rest. And when you have X which increases, you increase the volume of the branches. So of course you decrease the resistance. And so for example, to fix the IDs, if you imagine that the alveoli and the branches are made of the same matter, everything deforms homothetically, the neutral value is related to the reference volume at rest, actually, and can be estimated at 0.4. So 0.4 corresponds to a kind of neutral value. And if you have theta closer to zero, it means that you have some action, or it means that you are more rigid, that the branches are rigid. So how can we expect this very simple model to recover some notion of efficiency related to the action of the smooth metal? It's simply due to the fact that for lower value of theta, the resistance is higher, so that might be seen as counterproductive. But for the same volume increase, you have more of this volume increase which is taken by the alveoli, so that the exchange area is bigger. So that, of course, goes in the right direction. So in case you might expect some improvement of the gas exchange. So we had, of course, to explicitly integrate the model this gas exchange. This is done the following way, in a very, again, a very simple way. We just see that the quantity of diffused oxygen is proportional to the area, the exchange area. So it's a much simpler model than what Bernard was proposing this morning, which is basically that it's proportional. And this area scales like the volume to the third. So that I say that the flux, the instantaneous flux of oxygen, right like that. So this corresponds, this is quantity which is proportional to the volume of alveola, which integrates, of course, this parameter. By, for example, by with theta equals 1, this is completely unrealistic. Theta equals 1 would mean that alveoli are rigid. Of course, not the case. In that case, you have something which is very bad because you keep very small exchange area. And actually, that's what we find. Well, not yet. Let me write simply the Yabo system. So we have the same ODE, about the same case, actually, non-linear. But what is most important change is the resistance, which varies with x. So at least we have an ODE which is non-linear. We have the first little mathematical difficulty, but as we use numerical schemes, not even so I have to say very difficult to handle. So, and this is the new, this is just an observable, this is not, this is weakly coupled because Q depends on x, but x does not depend on Q. So you just measure that's this new efficiency, which is simply the quantity of oxygen blood within this very simple model. And the curve you find is that we were satisfied, at least we find a local extrema. So that is interesting. And so I recall you, so theta, the neutral value is 0.4. I don't know where is the real value, actually. And what just what I know is that if you, for example, if you take a bronchodilator, you reduce the action of the smooth muscle, so you increase the value of theta. So that's one of the things you can be sure about, because theta small corresponds to rigid branches. So if you trigger off the action of the smooth muscle, it corresponds to theta, to an increase of theta. So we find this this optimal value, which is actually very close to zero. And that might, I don't want to say too much about that single curve, but you see that it's it might be interesting to have actually small branches to not to decrease too much the resistance by increasing the diameter. It's important to control, because if you do that, you increase the exchange area, and so you have a better oxygen diffusion in the blood. And another remark, which might be also compared to what Bernard was saying this morning, you see that this optimal is quite close to very stiff. So theta negative, you might wonder what does it correspond to. Theta a priori is a parameter between 0 and 1. Actually, it might correspond to another action of the smooth metal. I heard that it happens in practice. You have some pathology based on the fact that the smooth metal actually overacts, so that it really reduces the diameter, so you have a really an action of this parameter theta, which and you see that if you are at the optimal, you are quite close to be close to a catastrophic zone, where you don't have any deficiency. Recall you, it's proportional to the quantity of O2, so this corresponds to, I hope so, at least to the quantity you're supposed to get. And if you move the theta to the left, it drops down to almost by simply changing theta value 0.1 or 0.2. So I won't say more about this problem, but that's first just to illustrate the fact that very simple model might be used at least to investigate some action. This is very controversial, as I don't know if it's Marcel or Dana said this morning about the action of the smooth muscle. That's a way to see things, actually. So another improvement of the model is based to oxygen impoverishment. And that also might be related to a question which was asked this morning. So it's simply by integrating a new variable. The variable, we have this Q, which is the quantity of oxygen in the blood, and Q, so this is a flux dot Q. And C is a concentration, it's taken as a simple constant, is basically the mean concentration of oxygen within the alveoli, the neighborhood of the exchange areas. So again, it's a very simpler model than what was presented this morning, but it might be used to investigate into some funny questions. What I write here is simply that the flux of oxygen is proportional to the exchange area and to the concentration, which was written this morning. So I drop the dependence upon other parameters. And what I say that is this concentration changes with respect to the time, of course. And this is kind of complicated. This is the characteristic function of R plus. Basically, what it says is that there are two ways to change the concentration. First, oxygen diffuses in the membrane, so it's lost because it goes in the blood. And also, when you breathe, when you expire, you when you inspire, so it means that you the velocity is positive. So in that case, this is one. When you inspire, you have fresh air getting in, and when you expire, you have concentration air at concentration which might be already reduced. So that explains this awkward term. So when you do that, you can find those ways. So it's also something which is not so easy to tune up because, of course, the diffusion does not happen uniformly in the alveoli, as I said this morning. But it, we just try to do the average parameter. What is here, this curve for example corresponds to oxygen concentration. That's a bit caricatural. That might be what it's. But you see at least one of the assumptions we based our model on. So this corresponds to second. So what you see here, and it might be wrong actually, it might be based on the wrong choice of parameter, but we based our diffusion on the fact that here you have some concentration of oxygen, and here you have an exponential decrease. So it's on the picture you see that the characteristic dissipation time, damping time, is about a few seconds, say 4 or 5 seconds. But I don't know if it's exactly, that's something that I saw in the literature. But you see that that's what was said this morning, that of course you have to inspire. When you are here, for example, you have oxygen diffusing in the blood, so it reduces. So if you just hold like that, of course, at the end this decreases. And after, on our model, after say 7 or 8 seconds, you have a negligible quantity of oxygen, so you don't freeze anymore, actually, so you have to get more fresh air. And this is the efficiency. And I would like, to, actually, this model at that time does not answer to anything, but at least I think it's a nice model to answer questions. For example, it makes it possible to reformulate some questions which were asked this morning. For example, if you consider a fixed time interval, say 1 minute or 2 minutes, much bigger than the duration of a usual cycle, and you consider F, external force, as a control, what is it possible to answer the question? That's something we didn't do yet, and it's not so easy because you have this non-continuous term characteristic function. We have this way and back, which is not too easy to deal with theoretically, but at least numerically, we might investigate it. How can we maximize the efficiency, which is quantity of oxygen that you get in 1 minute, say, with respect to you want to choose to control your forcing term. And for example, you have a given amount of energy. So you want to get oxygen, of course, to have energy, but you have spend some energy for that. So let's suppose, for example, you have and in the model, it's very easy to estimate work. You have to, well, not so easy because it depends on the solution. But at least let's say that you have a certain amount of quantity and you won't get as much oxygen as you may obtain, what will you get? So the question is, for example, do you recover the quasi-periodic scenario for that? That's not, I don't know, I would guess so. And another interesting question, I think, is do you get forced expiration? That's not, when you are at rest, you breathe. It's known that expiration is natural, so that F is zero during expiration. But, for example, if you have to run, then you begin to expire in a forced way. So it leads to the other formulation. You might wonder whether, for example, this is another problem corresponding to athlete or something. You don't care if you die after the exercise. So you have, you will see, but you have 1 minute and you want to be very strong, the best one. So, but you are limited by your own muscle forces. So F is now bounded by maximum force. You might have different forces for expiration and inspiration, of course. And you want to maximize Q of T. And I would expect, well, I would hope that, for example, if you answer that question, you might see that you might see forced expiration happen. I hope that. I don't have the answer, but at least the model. This model is a framework to at least ask the question in the mathematical world. And another question, if you consider these minimization problems, for example, what happens when you have some crisis, for example, sudden increase of R, when you have rejection of diameter during the asthma crisis, for example, what is the best way to breathe when you have asthma crisis? So I guess people who know that, they find it, but that would be fun to see if mathematically you can recover what is done in practice.
Okay, so let's forget this very simple model. I would like to talk,
so I have to be strict on time, so just to evaluate. So I have 20 minutes or
23.
Okay.
Okay, so let me present you, now I'm going to forget the COZ model and to go into a much more exploratory.
I have to say that this might sound quite unrelated to modeling problems, but I would like to convince, it's always difficult to justify. At least we tried as mathematician to provide a nice framework to analyze the set equations corresponding to ventilation. And so I'm going to present, at least it contains some problems which were already introduced this morning or this afternoon. So the question we asked is, does it has sense to have infinite generation tree? So to replace the tree with a finite generation by an infinite one. So this question was addressed by Bernard this morning with clearly a negative answer. So I'm going to try to convince you that in some way we might at least, it leads to interesting mathematical questions, and it's a way to write things. It leads at least again to a interesting question, I would say. I would not promise anymore. But so the assumption is again, so I forget the Navier-Stokes part. So this corresponding reality to a subtree. So I consider that the flow is obeys Stokes equation, so this is a part of the Stokes of the flow. U is the flux, U of x, y, x naught, x I, x 3, for example, is the flux from here to here. So this is, well, you don't have peaks in your plan, so this is a Kirchhoff flow. And you have the Poiseuille law, which take this for Py minus Px equals to the resistance of edge E multiplies by the flux. So U now represents a flux. So that was also the model presented by Céline. So it makes it possible, so this is a bit abstract, but you will see at least more people used to PDE in fluid mechanics. It takes a nice form because it really looks like a PDE. So if you don't like PDE, you won't like it, but if you do like, at least you will see that it's quite similar. So it can be written in an abstract form by introducing operators. So this is a function of flux. It leaves on the edges. And to fluxes, it associates at each vertex the balance of flux. So this one is equal to zero. That would be a possibility to write in a very compact way the conservation. And you have the same, which is formally the adjoint operator. In fact, it's the opposite of the chain. The adjoint plays the role of the gradient, which is simply d delta star of p of x, y is p y minus p x. So it makes it possible to write quasi-low. So I will use c for r minus 1. So this is written in a very compact way. It means that for each edge, you have this relation, which is verified. And Kirchhoff's law, it writes simply delta u equals 0 is there that you don't lose any fluid at the vertices. So it takes this form. And for people who are familiar with the Fourier mechanics, for example, Darcy-Low, it's exactly the form you have. So let, yeah. Here you have the corresponding PDE, where U, expresses, it models the flow in a porous medium. U is the velocity, P is the pressure, and this is a real PDE, so it's written almost everywhere, and of course it's based as the same form. So delta zero means that you are not conserving everywhere, if not you just have R3 which is blocked. Delta zero means that you have some quantity, some flux getting in through the node, the nose which I wrote zero, which is the root of the tree. And you have, so I'm going to pass what quickly on the equation, but have natural way to measure things on those networks. This is very general and can be applied to any network, even not a tree. And you have a natural L2 space and H1 space. Just let me say that, for example, for pressure, it is a way to say that you are interested in pressure field which are associated to a finite dissipated energy only. So it's very natural, looks mathematical, but actually it has a physical motivation. And so it gives a natural structure to your space, which makes sense even if you have an infinite tree, just that sum might be infinite. Countable, of course, but infinite. So in the case T is a dyadic tree, so this is a bit abstract. I'm going to just spend a few minutes. I'm sorry for those who are not familiar with that thing, but this is the abstract way to ask whether there is something at the end. So let me recall that. The question I asked is that if I consider this tree, but the infinite counterpart, not 23 generation, but infinite number of generation, do I have something at the limit? Might there exist? Am I able to define a pressure field, for example, at the limit? This pressure field might correspond in reality to pressure field you have in the parenchyma. In that 300 million alveoli, you have for each alveoli a value for the pressure. That's tempting for a mathematician or someone who likes to model things in a continuous way to associate to this collection of many, many values a continuous field. That's what we try to do. But what Bernard said this morning is that this action having the number of generation go to infinity does not make sense if you consider geometry, volume, because the volume is infinite. But as a functional tree, that's what you said, I think, I consider the tree only as functional. So it might be an electric network, actually. So I consider it in a way in an abstract, something completely decorrelated with space. So
it's
as
an abstract but functional.
It's abstract but functional.
The limit makes sense because the h equals this 0.79 only holds for the
volume.
After
yeah.
You do what you want.
Yeah. So
I can consider the high dimensional space.
Yeah, that's
a four dimensions.
Yeah. Well, actually, an abstract way to ask this question in mathematical form is to see if you define your space with finite energy and you define the space with which are zero, which is very easy to define, which are zero at the infinite. Is there a difference between both, or does there exist something that you can measure at infinity? And actually, there is a positive answer, so of course, I skip the details. Corresponds to the PhD of Christine Vanier. Yes, actually, and again, we find this value, this critical value, if the effective resistance is finite, and the effective resistance, if I consider this H, the same, I use the same notation, we have an increase of individual resistances, which is geometric, and which is Rn proportional to 1 over H3, which gives a finite resistance. The total resistance is some Rn divided by 2.
to the end. So this is finite, actually, if and only if, and this was already written this morning, if h is bigger than this 0.79, and it is actually, we consider that this is the case for h equals 0.85. So we, it's close to, of course, to, as Bella said, is quite close to fail, but it works. So we can define something at the limit. So we can write, and we are very happy, something which actually does not make any sense in from the model, because this is very abstract, actually. It's a way to set the respiration problem. By saying that is that I am able to write a mathematical model for the respiration with an infinite tree, and I prescribe a pressure at the infinite, at the leaves of the tree, which are infinite, but in an abstract way. I'm not able to describe what is this G. I just know that you have more than one choice to do that. There is something in that space. So the next question has to describe this space, actually, this trace space. What are the pressure at infinity? That might be a way to give an idea of what is the pressure field within the parenchyma. Does it have some correlation in space, that it has some regularity? So it can be done actually in a semi-abstract way. By semi-abstract, is that I define properly pressures at the leaves on the of the infinite tree, but it's not plugged yet in the physical space. So it's still abstract, it still lives on this functional tree, but at least you have pressures at the leaves. So that is possible. You can define some subspace. You can define gamma, actually, the boundary. This a leaf of this infinite tree is a way to infinity. So it's the sequence of left, right, right, left, left, etc., which can be coded by 0, 1. So this is a way to describe this set of leaves. So you can define that. And I will end this part by saying that this can be done in a bit more less abstract way by plugging and embedding the abstract tree within kind of real parenchyma, at least a domain of R2 or R3, the following way. We consider a hierarchical decomposition of the domain, current 2, and then all subdomain in 2. And so it can be formalized the following way. We have this decomposition, and at each generation, corresponds to a generation of the tree, we cut it in two parts, and we have a natural correspondence between the tree and the actual domain. So when you do that, you you describe mathematically the way the tree irrigates the actual parenchyma. Well, actually, I don't know exactly how it's done in practice, but you have some data. This is taken from medicine book, perhaps some of you have already seen it. So it's not a picture I did myself, so it's a bit more serious than that. So we have some information about the way it's done, at least for the first generation. And further information might be obtained by, for example, by putting some sprays and try to visualize them. So let me say simply that you can define, you use special function defined on the tree. Basically, those are functions which are asymptotically equals to 1 on a subtree and 0 everywhere else. Those are very easy to define properly. And you consider, of course, the corresponding function, the tree. These by linear ID, you can define that, extend it to a mapping between the space of all those functions and function in the real domain. And this, and for those who are familiar to trace theorems, by using a density argument, you can define a trace, like really a pressure, a space for pressure fields. And it can be done at least if you cut exactly in two. If not, that's really a mess, but if you cut in two, at least asymptotically. At the beginning, you can do what you want, but at the end, you really have to cut more and more precisely into equal parts. Then you can extend it into a mapping from what I call H1, is the set of pressure on the tree, which are associated with finite energy, and it can identify these
a set of pressure to a subspace of L2. So it's a, we say sometimes, catholic space of function, something which can identify, we can talk about. And you can even say more, so that won't say anything to people who are not familiar to Sobolev or Bezov space, but if you have regularity and you have some assumption on the regularity of the subdomains, you can show that actually the pressure field you obtain is regular, has some regularity, some correlation in space. It was not obvious at the beginning because the finite dissipate, the criteria you use to define the regularity and the pressure is only associated to the tree. And here you find a regularity associated to the domain. And if the connection between the tree and the domain is not too bad, you recover a part of this regularity. That that was not so expected. We didn't know actually what to expect. So we find natural regularity for the actual lengths with h equals 0.85, something which belongs to hs with s 0.45. I don't know if it, you have to be deep in this consideration to feel, to appreciate it. But at least it has some correlation. It means that you can define value almost everywhere. It does not, it means something, the pressure at a point in the physical domain. So that's already something. And it really means something to me that if you measure some average mean value at a point and the mean value in the neighborhood, you won't find something which is too far away. So if you want to measure a thing, it means something. Okay, so let me skip. So I will finish with something even less further away to our model. I wanted to talk about that because quite recent. I'm not trying to try to justify what I'm going to say. It just, again, is to try the nice mathematical framework to account for the fact that something Delphine say, which he studied the wave equation with the term coming from the structure, the Laplace equation, which is based off the metric of the Euclidean space, you better think. So it's the length from the outside. And you also have another way to see things, it's from the tree. You have two different ways. When you have two points in the parenchyma, they are, you might say that they are close in the Euclidean space, but they might be very far away, considering the tree. So if you have to go to the nose and then back, they are far away from each other. So it's a tentative, an attempt to express that properly. And we had actually a nice surprise. It's that it gives you a very, very nice, completely unuseful, but very nice formula for the mapping which associates to a collection of fluxes at the ends of the tree, which if you want to reconstruct the pressures, this mapping can be written in a very simple way, very nice way. So it suggests that it is a natural way to see things. So it's the following. It's another way to ask the question, is there a natural way to index points here? And actually, I hope I will convince you about that. The natural way is the following. So you take zero correspond when you go to the left and one when you go to the right. And then you write those, so 0, 0, 0, it's it. And here you write that from the right to the left. You have a sequence of 1 and 0, and you consider the number written in base 2. So it does not give you 0, 1, 2, but 0, 4, 2, 6. And so I don't know if you see the shape is, you could translate it in music, it's quite classical, like a broken scale, 0, 4, 2, 6. And it's very nice, even from a computing, because if you consider the next generation, 0 gets here, and you keep its hierarchical way to number thing, which you lose if you have 1, 0, 1, 2, 3. The next generation, it's messy if you have to deal with that way. Here the 0 goes there, the 4 was here, goes there, and then it's 0 plus 8, 4 plus 8, etc. So this looks awkward, but it has a natural structure. Why is it interesting? If you have a natural way to measure things in Z, the set of integers, is the following way. When you consider an integer, you write it that way with Z prime is odd, and you consider that, which is called the 2 norm of Z, is 2 to the minus alpha. That's fine. Look, it's a funny way to measure things. It means, for example, that 2 to the n is a sequence which goes to 0. Okay, that's a funny space, you will see, but it's quite adapted to our situation. And also, if you multiply 3 times 2 to 0, okay, it goes to 0. zero. And we'll see that everything 3 to the n, it goes to, at least we can extract a sequence which converges to something. It's a funny space, and it gives you a distance which is what you were looking for, because those points are quite close. The distance is 1/4. Here the distance 1/2, so they are farther away. And those two points, the distance, if you have 1/6, 1 - 6 is -5, it's odd. So the alpha is 0, so the distance is 1/2. The 0 is 1. Okay? So it gives you exactly what you want. So this is the worst part. I'm not going to skip, but this is the natural way to define the limits. You can see that the increased sequence of the leaves of the subtrees measured with this distance, you can see that this is the simplest way to see things, the increasing union of all that endowed with this way to measure thing, and you can see that I'm sorry for those who are not familiar with that, you can see that the complex closure of that with respect to this distance. You have something which is very funny. It's called Z2. It's a very bizarre space. I'm going to say a few things, but I think this is really the natural space for that. It's called a set of dyadic integers. So there is a way to define it properly in a mathematical point of view. It's not important here. And you can really, it's a natural way to index ends of your infinite tree. So if you go an infinite time to the left, you will end at 0. So you still have 0. When you go to the right here, you find something which is negative. I'm not able. For example, if you go that way, 1, 1, 1, 1, what do you find here? So you find, I can't show you. One, it corresponds to the dyadic writings, which the sum n equals 0 to infinity, so it's 1 plus 2 plus. If you consider the sum at generation n, you have 1 minus 2 n plus 1, and this goes to 0. So you have minus 1. So this is the natural index for that point that I wrote here. And you have all that. And what is nice in that, you don't have this generation that you have when you plug your tree within the interval 0, 1. For example, if you this point is not equal to this point, which when you plug in the interval 0, 1, you have this degeneracy and the way to write real numbers in a dyadic way. So you don't have that. And you have, of course, as the set of leaves is non-countable, that's not you cannot have only integers. So you have other things. You have some rational numbers like 1/3. You can find that with the same way. And you have other things which are basically sequences of 0/1, which are non-periodic, which there is no simple way to write that. And so let's say a few minutes. Yeah, no, just tell me two. Okay, so I will finish with that. I promised you a compact way to write things. There is a way. I found that in algebra book. Actually, it's completely. It's not a priori adapted to model things, but actually it follows a suggestion of our professor at École Polytechnique in the math, real math department, Pierre Colmez. There is a way to measure things, to define an integral on that space, and you can write, if you consider mu as the set of fluxes, you consider the ventilation problem, for your infinite tree, you consider that you know all the fluxes on all, for example, you know the fluxes corresponding to this subtree at every, you know about every detail of the flux, so it's a natural way to define that. So you know the fluxes on Z2, your natural space, and it's actually not such a complex computation. You can write quite easily that the pressure can be expressed explicitly for the geometric tree, at least, in that way. So it's a kernel, it's actually a convolution, which it was not with the other way to write things, but in Z2 is a convolution. And what is nice is that it makes appear something which looks like a green-like kernel in RD,
the actual space. And what is a bit exciting, actually, if you look in detail, it's not so exciting than that, but gives a sense to, you can define an actual dimension. The green kernel is like that, where D is the dimension. And here you have log 2 of alpha. Alpha is the alpha of the increase of the resistance. So it gives you, for the real tree, a natural equivalent dimension of 2.7. So that might be tempting to say, oh, it looks like a fractal thing between 2 and 3. But I have to say that there is no geometry, nothing. There is no dimension here. So that's, I think we need some caution to interpret it. And if alpha were, for example, if you take alpha, which is less than 1, if you have very slowly increasing resistance, it's even decreasing resistance, you find a dimension which is negative. So, of course, it has to be interpreted with care. And so I think I will not continue further. Thank you.